Welcome to the Art of Appointment Setting podcast, where we ask today's most successful experts and entrepreneurs to share the most powerful lead generation and appointment setting tactics they use to build their business and grow their revenues. Now your host from the city that never sleeps, New York, is Kwesi Sachijinai.
Thanks, everyone, for joining the conversation. This is Kwesi Sachijinai. My guest today is Justin Matera. Justin is the CEO of Matera Management, which is a marketing company that helps churches, nonprofits, and businesses to connect with a greater audience in the world. Justin became the youngest chapter president of his local BNI business group in Bay Ridge in Brooklyn. And during his leadership, he broke all the chapter records. So his chapter grew by 50% in membership. He had over $2.5 million in closed business and became the largest chapter in Brooklyn. Justin also has had the opportunity to speak in colleges all over New York City, including NYU, Cooper Union, City College, Baruch College, St. John's University, and he is also currently a pastor at Zion Church in Barrie. So Justin, thanks so much for joining the conversation today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so I mean, I know we connected at the BNI chapter when I visited in Brooklyn, and we had, you know, a good conversation after that at a coffee shop. I really remember that. And we talked about a lot of things. And one of the things that stood out for me personally was how you, you know, part of your journey in the business was trying to, you focus intentionally on a specific industry. Mm-hmm. And I want us to delve into that a bit. Yeah. But before we do that, you know, let's start it off with, you know, your journey to becoming the president of the BNI, because I know it's a great community, mm-hmm. especially for networking with like-minded people and attracting the right kind of clients. So my curiosity is, where were you at with your business before you started, and what kind of impact did you see during the period of your engagement with them?
Yeah, I had I was still a newbie when I joined BNI. I was maybe a little over a year old.
With your business, not yourself.
Yes. business. So it was a really it was awesome. Someone just told me about it in a car ride. I had with a friend offhandedly, and I was looking for networks to join to really grow the business, because after a year being in business, I wasn't sustainable yet as far as having a salary. I was just getting married, and I needed to stop making nothing. And so I joined it, and I was really happy. Just the chapter I joined in Bay Ridge, such an incredible chapter, really strong, tight-knit community. My advice to everybody starting a business now is go find a BNI that you can join, just because it made such a huge difference in the beginning stages of my business, being able to connect like that to other business owners in the area.
What kind of difference did it make?
Huge. So I would say probably for the 2 to 3 years after that, maybe anywhere between 40 to 60% of the revenue I was getting came from BNI. And I experienced every year for 5 years that I joined BNI, I experienced 50% growth on average in my company. And so since I was new, didn't have a strong portfolio, didn't have a lot of know-how as far as like pitching and talking about my business to people, joining that community really helped me build a relationship and learn a lot of that. And a lot of the businesses in BNI took risks on me, even though I didn't have a portfolio, because they knew me personally. And that made a huge difference for me to start landing other bigger clients, being able to work with a lot of the people in that group first.
Right. So for many of the listeners who probably don't know what you do, you are building websites and online marketing for these businesses?
Yeah. So there's two components of my business. One component is the brand and website. So, you know, getting the kind of foundation done, the print identity, design identity, website, all of the brand elements when it comes to the design world done. The second part is the retainer fee. So we manage clients' social media accounts. They keep us on design retainer. We do search engine optimization for them. Basically, we become their digital marketing department in their organization for them.
Mm. And I know this is a little bit off script, but would you say that the retainer model had a bigger impact on the business model in general?
Yeah, for sure. That was when, I will never go back to the old days. I had one-off projects and referrals came in pretty well, but you just never knew, if you were going to make it next month. And retainer really changed that for us. Really projecting growth and revenue, sales, changed the hiring process, able to get better people, knowing, what we can afford and what we can't afford. And that was just such a game changer for our business. And thinking that way, going into pitches, really changed us going from working with clients on a short-term basis to now having clients for 2-3 years and for the foreseeable future, continuing that relationship. Changes the dynamic drastically.
Fascinating. And I know one of the things that you also mentioned in our conversation was at some point you decided to do a lot of projects with nonprofits. So you sort of heavily focus on that. And I find that really fascinating because at least, for me as a business owner, and also I have a lot of conversations with business owners, the challenge is there's always an opportunity because when you say, hey, I want to just specialize in this kind of service or this kind of industry, you might have the fear that you're probably leaving money on the table. So my question to you is, how did you reach a decision to actually pivot and specialize in one or two industries? And what was the tipping point?
Yeah, so retainer model was the tipping point for us. And there was a couple of things that happened. I did a less risky pivot in the sense of it kind of dropped in our lap rather than me making the fully conscious decision, even though there were conscious decisions in us making that. And I'll try to go over that quickly. But when we moved to the retainer model, nonprofits went from our worst clients to our best clients. And I wasn't anticipating that.
Why was that?
The reason that was is because when we were doing one-off projects, nonprofits really didn't want to spend a lot of money building a website and a brand. But they were really interested in building long-term communications plans to grow their volunteership, to grow their donor base, to improve communications with, all the stakeholders in their organization. And so instead of trying to just land a big bill in the beginning, really we became their teammates and they were happy to pay us on retainer because they saw the results. And the results, what we noticed is for retainer work and just the kind of work we did in general, were a lot more potent for nonprofit organizations than they were for businesses. And that's because just me personally, I'm very obsessed with the front end. And so everything that we do, the design component is really important. So in our company, the programmers take a backseat to the designers. We do that intentionally. And, everything functions and has to function properly. But, if it's a question of who's going to win the argument, the designer or the programmer, it's definitely going to be the designer. And for businesses, that was cool. We would make things beautiful for them. But when a client could go on and we can make a beautiful website for them, but then they would just Google their name. And if they had a 2-star Yelp review, it didn't matter how beautiful their website was or how good their social media was. The person didn't care, move on. And business owners didn't get that a lot. But for nonprofits, people would make decisions almost solely based on the beauty of their website and the ability of them to communicate on social media platforms. And so that drove maybe like 95% of decision-making for most people when they were deciding to either volunteer or donate for the first time. And so we really began to shine in that area because that's the area that we really cared about. And so word of mouth really just started to flourish a lot more when we started the retainer model and then working with the nonprofits.
Right. So after you got that first nonprofit customer, did you proactively start reaching out to other nonprofits? What, of course, in addition to word of mouth, did you do that?
we realized our first client in the retainer model was not a nonprofit. It was a business. And then our second client mm-hmm. was a nonprofit. And we realized we had exponentially better results with the nonprofit than we did with the business. So I decided I was going to make a case study from this. We put together a case study. After 4 months of working with them, we saw really incredible results. Just the ROI was much better. And then all the nonprofits that I had as clients, I started sharing that case study with them. And then all the new clients that were coming on for just a website or just a logo, I would just share the case study with them and say, hey, look, we did this with this nonprofit. You know, would you be open to having a conversation about us being able to do this for your organization? And usually we got a lot of great reception to those ideas because every nonprofit is looking to grow in that mm-hmm. area right now.
And I mean, I totally agree with, you know, the emphasis on design that you have because your website is really classic. I love it. When you started, you know, building the case studies for nonprofits, I can imagine you still had a portfolio of business clients. Mm-hmm. Did you fire them? How did you handle the conversation that, look, we might probably not be continuing this? Or do you even do that in the first place?
Yeah, I will never forget the month that I fired three of my business clients. Oh man.
My God. Okay.
It was awesome.
It was awesome. I love it.
It was. You know, I realized when we moved to retainer model, there came a time when I realized I didn't need all of my clients. And there were a few of them that we continually lost money on their projects. You know, they were a burden to our team and it was just really hard to work with them. They weren't hiring professionals. They wanted to hire people where they would still be the professional and tell us what to do. And so they're, were a few clients that we realized, man, this is just sucking up too much time, too much resources, and it's not worth what we're doing at the end of the day. And we wanted to focus really on the clients that we felt like we were teammates that respected our work and mm-hmm. really wanted to grow with us and grow with our business. And so within a span of a month, I fired three of our business clients, and I can tell you, I never look back. It was one of the best decisions I ever
made. Did you send them an email, or did you call them and say, "Hey, we cannot do this anymore"?
Yeah, it was a mix. Okay. So one, I was avoiding the call because I was so done, but I got the call anyway, of course, explaining why we weren't going to work together. The other two, it was a call, just. You know, they were asking for more work and, you know, had more projects coming down the pipeline. And I just jump on the phone and explain, we just didn't have the capacity time to work with their projects anymore. And we could help them find somebody else that fit their need if they wanted us to. Mm.
And I really want us to unpack this even for a couple of minutes more. So for a lot of agencies or small businesses starting, you know, they're all over the place. And I'm speaking for myself as well. you're trying to do everything possible to get, you know, the build the case studies and, you know, see what's going to work and what's not going to work. I know in your story, you said, you know, for you, it's more of like fell on your lap. So, but you proactively harnessed that opportunity. Mm-hmm. So my question to you would be, you know, for how important is it for businesses to consider the possibility of specialization if they want to grow their revenues, and what kind of impact should they hope for?
Yeah, I think there's different phases that businesses go through. The beginning phase, starting out, you're bootstrapping, and honestly, you're just trying to get any dime that you can from anywhere. And so you take a lot of projects on, especially in the beginning, the first 2 years, I took a lot of projects on that I would never even consider today, but I had to in order to stay afloat. But there comes a time where you have to realize that it is time to pivot and you need to make those hard decisions where you say, okay, I am going to lose out on some revenue and that is going to hurt, but it will free up, you know, say 20% more time where we can fill that space with better clients, better revenue generating, and more life building kind of projects. And, mm-hmm. and I think part of knowing when that time is part of being a business owner. You know, there has to be some intuition that you have about, you know, when you're going to get to that next phase and next level in your business. And
Is there any revenue metric or is just a gut feeling?
I think there's definitely revenue metrics involved. I don't remember them specifically off the top of my head. But I think there's a little bit of both. It's you knowing, you know, for me, I knew how much money I needed to survive. And you know, that was kind of like the first half, maybe the first 3 to 4 years of my business, of me knowing how much I needed to survive and then using the rest to hire really good employees. You know, some of that was, okay, there were times where I would pay myself last all the time. And so I wouldn't, and sometimes I didn't get a chance to pay myself and I'd have to make up for that 4 or 5 months down the road. And, you know, just being able to make those decisions and, you know when enough is enough, or you need to, you know, you struck something good. There were a couple times in the business where I thought, man, we have something that we can use. We did really well in this area, so let's try to grow. All the time, they didn't always work out. I would make case studies, try to sell, you know, one service over another, but constantly looking for those areas that you can pivot, grow, and harness something that's good and new was really integral to us just kind of to keep growing, because when I started, I was a completely different business from what I am now.
Do you remember any scenario or case where just because of you specializing on nonprofits, you became like your business became a lot more attractive to other businesses or other nonprofits? So they, you know, they say, hey, this guy is just focused on nonprofits and he might be able to add a ton of value, so let's work with him. Did you have any scenario like that?
So I think this goes for any other niche that you're going to pick. I started to kind of work my way in the field in the sense of the first nonprofit organization that we started working with, they were known by other nonprofits. So we would pitch to those people that knew that name. And then, you know, little by little, we would work our way up the food chain of trying to land somebody that had a little bit more notoriety or a little bit more you know, brand recognition in the nonprofit industry. And, you know, the more and more we were able to put different brands under our belts and organizations, the more the bigger brands would trust us because they knew we were taking care of these. And a lot of chatter talk between organizations, because I think if you're ever in a specialized niche, a lot of people know each other, because we're working with most of our clients have been in the industry 20 to 40 years. So a lot of them know each other. And so trying to work your way up the ladder by really taking care of the clients you do have and not leaving them when you do get some better contracts or bigger organizations was really important.
Fascinating. Awesome. So where can people learn more about your work and just connect with you?
Yeah. So work is really important to us. I'm not a good salesperson. I've never been a good salesperson. It's an unfortunate thing. I wish I was better at it. But the driver for me was always let our work speak for itself and give incredible customer service. And the third thing I always felt like that I needed to work was networking. I'm good at making friends. I'm not good at selling. So I would just try to make friends and take care of people. And those three things over the last 6.5 years have really sustained us to continue on this path of growth. So rather than focusing on the hard sell, we've really just been focusing on being friendly, getting our work done really well, and taking care of our current customers.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Justin, for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for the interview. Happy to do it.
Thank you for listening to the Art of Appointment Setting podcast with Kwesi Sachi-Dinai. Find out more about how to get high-value appointments at catalyze.io. And while you're there, check out the free resources for appointment setting. And be listening for the next episode of the Art of Appointment Setting podcast.